Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When adaptation is required, creatures evolve. So does language. New words for new inventions, Skype, blogs, podcasts. But what about the new situations that arise as our culture changes with time? What's the word for the way all the riders reach for their cell phones as the subway changes from the tunnel to the elevated track? The ache in your thumb joints from too much text messaging? The way women walk when first venturing out in their sky-high Manolos? Do you read Barbara Walraff? She writes the Backpage Word Court and Word Fugitive columns as a contributing editor for The Atlantic Monthly, and she has a new book that looks at the process and need for adding new words. The book is called Word Fugitives in Pursuit of Wanted Words, and it's just out from HarperCollins. We're going to take a lot of phone calls for her with some different requests for you, and Barbara Walraff joins me now in the studio. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And before we put out the calls for people to suggest new words out of thin air or to come up with words for situations that you've listed, what do you mean by fugitive words? Why do you use that word?
There are holes in the language that need to be filled. So the way it works in The Atlantic is people write in with a request for a word that they really wish they could have in their everyday life, and then other kind, helpful people write in and suggest words to fill that gap.
So here are some examples of the gaps that you've identified, and listeners, it's 212-433-WNYC if you think you can fill any of these meaning gaps with an actual word that you make up, 212-433-9692. Wanting to get someone's voicemail, but getting them instead. The mental state from forgetting where you parked your car in your everyday lot. The man who will soon become your ex-husband. What do you call the man who will soon become your ex-husband? We need one good, spicy word for that. The word for the fizz that goes above the rim of a cup of soda. Or how about gossiping about new gadgetry? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you have any words to fill any of those definitions, or maybe you've thought of some words over the years that you just think should exist because they mean something that no word currently out there in usage means. 212-433-9692 for Barbara Walraff, author of Word Fugitives. So those unfulfilled meanings, these are ones that you've published?
They're published in the book, but in the column I present last issue's questions and the answers that people came up with. These are a bunch of new word fugitives that have yet to be solved,
right.
Found.
So some examples of one you've filled over time, fear of running over squirrels. You were looking for a word for that, and you or someone came up with swervousness.
I had some people say to me, you know, I can't relate to a fear of running over squirrels at all, and I'm not sure your typical New Yorker is going to be able to relate to it. But I live in a suburban kind of neighborhood, and I'm terrified of running over squirrels.
How about desire to run over pigeons? Maybe we need a word for that in New York. Someone who can read but not pronounce because you learned the word from a book.
And that's a very cute word, tome deaf.
T-O-M-E, deaf. I come upon that all the time because in my job, a lot of times I read about someone or something before I get to hear anyone else speak it. And then I have to speak it on the radio. And so hopefully I'm not tone deaf too much of the time. The equivalent of the Irish term witch's knickers for plastic shopping bags stuck in trees. Now, what are witch's knickers?
They're plastic shopping bags stuck in trees.
They
but
are.
when you hear the term witch's knickers, it doesn't sound particularly American.
I see.
It?
They say that in Ireland.
Yes. Yes. So Brendan O'Byrne told me. And I got one response from his brother. Brendan lives in Canada, but his brother lives in Ireland and had some response or other. That question set off a whole kind of interstate fight because the people in Virginia would say, oh, well, we call that West Virginia something or other. And the people in West Virginia would say, well, we call that Virginia something or other, and Wyoming and Every state was insulting its adjacent state.
That's pretty funny. And, of course, in Ireland, they've actually passed this tax. I think it's 5 cents or 15 cents on taking a plastic bag from a supermarket. So people there are starting to recycle their bags like perhaps nowhere else in the developed world. And I guess if witches' knickers were enough of the problem, that might have been one of the reasons. So you finally settled on a word for the American version, I think, which is, now I'm going to be tone deaf, foliage, F-O-U-L-I-A-G-E.
I will admit some of these things play a little better on the page than they do. And sometimes there are words that are so much like what the word that they're based on that you really can't tell them apart. But as opposed to foliage, foliage, I think, could have a future.
And the tendency of drivers to cluster behind highway patrol cars because they're afraid to pass, term that a halo effect. So you ask for a word for a soon-to-be ex-husband, and here is Angela in Middle Village who has a suggestion. Hi, Angela.
Hi. I would call him my tweener because he's in between, and you're in between.
That's a very friendly-sounding thing, and we did want a neutral kind of word. That's
nice
good.
To be nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank
yes.
You.
I think in the last, 10 years, 20 years, the word tweens for kids who are 10 to 12.
That's true.
Has come up. Another suggestion for the same requested word from Chris in Bay Ridge on WNYC.
Yes, hi. I think an ex-husband in waiting should be called a Y.
Why?
Well, Y precedes X in the alphabet.
Or maybe W does.
Okay, perhaps.
Thank you very much. So I think he was going after W, right? Because actually
X,
Y.
Good point. Good point. That's one thing that sometimes happens with these words is that you get a really clever idea, but it just the craftsmanship sometimes isn't perfect.
Do you think languages are subject to evolutionary forces?
Well, sure. The language just keeps changing. And when I wear my word court hat, I get a lot of people upset about that, words that had very particular meanings or that you weren't supposed to use them in a very particular way 50 years ago, they'll say, well, they learned that in school and that was 50 years ago and they still... using contact as a verb, that used to be about the way people feel about you. Some people feel about impact as a verb these days.
Yes, and so your position is you can use impact as a verb. That doesn't make you cringe?
Oh, no, I'm not in favor of impact. The thing is, everybody is at some particular place on the language spectrum, and where you want to be depends on how you see yourself. You can either be avant-garde and really enjoy using the latest things, or you can be a little bit conservative. It's almost like your wardrobe. It's the wardrobe for your thoughts.
So I think I get your point on impact now. Impact is in that place now where people are using it as a verb, but a lot of other people still do cringe. Contact used to be in that position, but now it's accepted.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly it.
Barbara in Nassau County. You're on WNYC. You have a word. Barbara, are you there? Oh, I think Barbara's getting confused by the delay. Huh. Oh, Barbara, turn your radio off. Hi.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Turn your radio off.
Okay. Well, my daughter, I thought, came off. Yes, I'm walking over to it, but... Yeah.
Barbara, just listen on the telephone. Okay, you know what? Give Barbara some tips there off the air, okay? Meanwhile, we're going to go to Robert in Boston. Robert, how are you hearing us in Boston today?
On Webstream or whatever you guys call it.
Great. What you got?
By the way, it's not why I called, but does language evolve, Brian? If you meant does language change, I mean, the answer, is, as your guest could tell you, is it certainly does. I mean, that's just axiom number one. I had two suggestions of words I have long wanted to introduce into the language, so I don't know that this is going to do it, but it's an opportunity. And one response to something you brought up already.
Mm-hmm.
The two words that, one of which I coined myself, as far as I know, is integritas, meaning having integrity. Show me another word that conveys that subtle meaning exactly as well.
Interesting. Barbara, have you ever thought of that, the adjective for someone who has integrity?
Yes, I have. In my newspaper column, which you can find the archives of at www.wordcourt.com, I was talking about that lack of an adjective.
Really?
It isn't in current dictionaries. And somebody called me up and said, well, in Webster's second, integritus does exist. I honestly don't remember whether it's integritus or integrius, because when I started going back into history, both of them are in the Oxford English Dictionary. So that's a word that's fallen out of use, but gosh, I wish it were back.
Well, it's nice to have an ally and know that I wasn't aware of your column, which I'm now going to look up after this call.
Although you didn't make up integritus, as it turns
well,
out.
Well, yeah, I meant that somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but I simply meant that I'd never seen it.
What's your other one?
Well, my other one wasn't invented by me, but by a friend years ago who was much handier in the kitchen than I, and he invented the word salatables, meaning anything that you can put into a salad, fruits or vegetables or whatever. I thought it was a terrific coinage.
Thank you, Robert. And here's another, maybe the best one yet, for a soon-to-be ex-husband, Alex in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What you got?
My word was wasband for a soon-to-be ex-husband.
I like it. Wasband.
Yeah.
Although it's a little more past tense than maybe fits the definition, Barbara.
That's true. Can we put it in the present perfect tense or work on your verb tense there, and you're going to have something.
Okay, thanks. Thank
you, but that's good. Husband. And Angie in Manhattan has another one. You've struck a chord in our divorce-filled world with this particular request. Angie, hi.
Hi.
What you got?
Beyonce.
Deonce.
Yeah.
Deonce. Very nice.
That's good. And that solves the tense problem.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't quite have the ring and the rhythm of husband.
Yeah, no, I like that better too.
But a deonce on the way toward becoming, you know,
You have to enunciate
detached.
It very carefully,
yes,
but
right.
Well done. Okay. Husband. How about that?
What?
Husband.
Has-been-d, yes.
That's hard to say.
Has-been-d, on the way to being a was-been-d. Maureen in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi, I have to really give credit to my sister's sister-in-law, but the word is lucage.
For?
For after you make a cut from cake or pie, the stuff that falls down into the pan.
The lucage?
Yeah.
Someone in my book uses the word sluice for a large slice, a particularly large slice. So when you cut a sluice, the lucage falls off.
Right.
Maureen,
okay.
Thank you for your call. As in, Johnny, get your fingers out of the lucage. Other
exactly.
People have to eat from that plate. Thank you very much. We will continue in just a minute with Barbara Walroff, whose book is called Word Fugitives, and we'll continue to take... Boy, do people have... You know, our listeners, I guess they sit around making up words, because all our lines are full with people who want to mention words that they've made up for situations or things for which words do not currently exist. We'll throw out some of the other definition fulfillment requests from Barbara Walroff, author of Word Fugitives, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Barbara Walroff, that's Wallraff, half of wallpaper, half of riffraff. I don't know, where does your name come from?
It's an old German name. I have a very famous German name relation who has done some quite radical things, but we'll save the discussion of Gunter Walroff for another time.
Uh-huh. Barbara Walroff's book is called Word Fugitives in Pursuit of Wanted Words. Maybe you know her Word Court column or her Word Fugitives column from the Atlantic Monthly. Let's see, before we go back to the phones... one of the examples you give is the word for the feeling of arriving after the heyday, arriving after the boom is over. Do you remember it?
Well, I remember that there was a whole sad story that went with it. The woman said that she'd, applied to law school too late, and now she is trying to buy a house, and they were really expensive. So I guess the question came a little while ago, because houses are
right, and
not
getting in after
ever.
Getting in just after the internet boom, so you came up with Gen X aspiration. So, Gen Xers, Gen X aspiration, and you've divided the book into words to describe our inner lives and our outer lives, plus special categories for things that annoy us, people, and other things. Is it significant that irritations seem to inspire the new words the most?
I kind of thought it was. When I didn't make up how to divide the book into chapters. I looked at what had come in, and there was a big, fat section on, I call it, tribulations.
And you do identify the holy grail of word coiners, which is?
That would be the single pronoun for he and she. Did you know that half a century ago they put the word fawn into Webster's dictionaries because that was proposed to be that pronoun?
Fawn?
Fawn, T-H-O-N.
Really? So if you don't want to say his or her all the time, if you want one word for that, or... You know, I still get tripped up on this because I've gotten to the point I don't want to use the specifically male he or his for a generic situation. And I don't want to say he or she every time, which sounds clunky, or his or her, especially when you're writing radio copy. And I don't want to really violate the singular plural rules by using their. This is, referring to one individual. Well, this is their book because I don't know if it's a man or a woman, but I do that sometimes. So there's no good answer as far as I'm concerned, not yet.
Well, that's exactly why this is the holy grail of word coining, that this is a word that everybody wants. And it's quite interesting, the words that everybody wants that we don't have. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked, what is the name for the current decade? Well, people have been asking me that for 10 years, and lots of things have been proposed, the aughts, the o's, the noughts, the noughties, all kinds of things. But we haven't started to use any one of them, so it doesn't have a name.
Do you have a favorite among those?
Oh, the o's seems like the most practical, and the noughties seems like the cutest, but nobody is...
That's true. Nothing's come into common usage.
Nope.
Mike in... Wait, I've got to reach down there to get Mike. There you go. Mike in... is it Holworth?
Yeah, Holworth, New Jersey.
Oh, Holworth, hi.
Mailman, not a resident. Yeah. Big fan, Brian. I just wanted to think, this would be in the category of things that annoy me, I guess, would be a snowhawk. You know, the SUV driving soccer moms that can't clear all the snow off the top of their trucks.
That's a new one on me. I've seen the soccer moms, but the word is new.
All right. So this really bothers you, the fact that some people don't clean all the snow off the top of their trucks.
They have these giant SUVs that can't fit a footstool to clear all the snow off the top of their trucks in the back, so it gets slapped on the windshield of my car.
Neither snow, nor wind, nor sleet, nor snowhawks will deter Mike from his route. Thank you very much. Sean in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. You have another one for the soon-to-be ex-husband?
I know, Brian. Yes, I do. Yester-hubby.
That makes the point, or actually does it? No,
no better than husband, right?
Yeah, I've got one for the soda.
Go ahead.
Soda cloud.
What was the question? Oh, the fizz that spills over the top?
Yeah, soda cloud.
That's alliterative. That fits together nicely.
Thank you very much. William in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, William.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for taking my call. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
This is a great show. I have a word, and the word, well, maybe I'll give you the definition. It's when someone calls you on their cell phone, on your cell phone, and they go on, and you can't get rid of them. My word for that is sabotage, because you are held captive. And I came up with that word because I'm more the saboteur. I'm usually the one that goes on and on and on, and people have to cut me off. So that's my word.
This is nice. You've got the noun and the for the person and for the activity.
Well, there's all kinds of words. I mean, I was trying to figure out the adjective, and then I have a question about fawn, but that P-H-O-N word was very curious. But it's like, what would the adjective for sabobantourage be? Sabobantouragistic, perhaps?
Something like that. And William, I'm going to go before you sabobantourage again.
Thank you for being
a sabobantour on the show today. I still like the nobody's called in with a suggestion for this one, which I think could really use a word. You came up with it, wanting to get someone's voicemail, but getting them instead. This has happened to me.
It's happened to many of us.
Do you have suggestions? Have people come up with possible words for that yet?
Well, the book is pretty newly out, and I've got all these questions in the book that don't have answers. I'm hoping to get them, but that's one of the ways you can use the book, to play this game with your friends.
Let's try Barbara in Nassau again. Hi, Barbara. Sorry for the problem before. Go ahead.
Okay, here I go. My daughter, I thought, came up with a wonderful word. She was feeling so thrilled about something she'd accomplished. She said, "Oh, I'm feeling so exuberated."
That's very nice.
I thought so, because it gives what she felt, and it comes from a word that we don't have parts of speech for.
I'm convinced that one of the reasons people still enjoy, as adults, coming up with these words is just the sheer joy of inventing language when you're a child. It takes us back to that time when you think you've heard a word and you're learning language, and children come up with these wonderful combinations of things.
You're right. My son came up with, he got burned on the radiator.
Exactly. And somebody else in the book has, the entire family now uses the word rainbrella.
Well, I thought radiheater was better than radiator. It conveyed a better sense of what it was.
Thanks a lot, Barbara, for speaking on the radi, whatever it is. My guest is Barbara Walraff, author of Word Fugitives in Pursuit of Wanted Words, just out from HarperCollins. Who are some of your favorite word coiners of all time?
Well, Rich Hall and the Sniglets series of books from the 80s is really popular, and there are a lot of funny words in there. But I have to say, I'm even fonder of The Deeper Meaning of Lif, which was created by the same guy who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and a friend of his. The two of them are both English, and rather than quite inventing the words, they invented meanings, because they took all the names of all those funny British place names, like Goose Cruives, and decided what those ought to mean if they weren't just place names. So The Deeper Meaning of Lif is a book from the 1980s. It's just full of wonderful things.
And another British writer who gets a special mention from you, J.K. Rowling, for inventing Quidditch.
Quidditch and Muggles. There are a lot of Harry Potterisms in those books.
Right. Quidditch is the game, of course, that Harry Potter plays, but that wasn't really filling a hole in the dictionary because nobody had ever thought of it before. You also mentioned Lewis Carroll.
Yes. Lewis Carroll and Edward Lear were writers of nonsense verses. I mean, think of Alice Through the Looking Glass and the poem Jabberwocky, 'Twas Brillig and the Slivy Toves. This was a new thing at that time, to make up words just for the sheer joy of making them up rather than really wanting them to mean anything.
And I didn't know that Shakespeare came up with rant, a word that's very current again today.
Yes, it is.
Or wild, and we should know, doing a talk show, and wild goose chase.
Shakespeare is credited with having coined about 1,000 words that we still use, but most of them are just little twists on old words. People who say you can't turn a noun into a verb or a verb into a noun should remember that the word impediment had existed in English for a long time, and then Shakespeare came up with impede.
Rich, on the Lower East Side, in search of the holy grail of coinage. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how's it going?
All right.
What
well,
you got?
My holy grail is for this she, he, him, her problem.
Right.
And on the sort of coming, drawing from foreign languages, I came up with Lee for she, he, ler for him, her, and Liz from for his or hers.
Lee, Lur, and Lim.
Lee, Lur, sorry, I'm sorry. Lee, Lur, and Liz.
Liz.
L-I-S, yeah.
Oh, many people pursue the Grail, but few find it. There have been many suggestions. Get in line.
Thank you, Rich. Why do you think it's so hard? Because there is such a need, at least by people who think about it, by people who write, that nothing has come into usage.
I'm told by linguists that no new pronoun has entered the language in, I forget, like 500 years. And I don't think you want the entire explanation of why that's the case. It's just not something that people seem to know how to coin or add to their language.
Let's see, another few that you came up with in the book, that restless feeling that causes us to repeatedly peer into the refrigerator when bored. Do you remember the word? I know there are a zillion of them in the book. I don't expect you to remember every one.
Yeah, you have to take pity on me because they come up with a bunch of good things. I remember cold comfort. I remember refrigerator magnetism. What was the one that you liked the best?
Well, I was kind of partial to Freon-UE, but I think the one you settled on was Frigidy.
Yes, that's right. Isn't that nice?
And here's another cell phone request, dear to the hearts of bus riders everywhere. What to call people with a cell phone glued to their ears? Some people suggested earheads, selfish, imbeciles, phonies, but the winner was?
I do believe that was yakasses.
Yes, it was.
That's the one question in the book that I led off with, if these are the answers, what was the question?
Angela in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Angela.
Hi there. Well, this is for the soon-to-be ex, and I decided on a more gender-neutral term. How about nex, N-E-X?
My nex?
My nex, and what I like about it is that far from being neutral, it has a little edge, because it does rhyme with hex.
And anything that starts with an E, with an N-E, has a little edge of negativity to it.
Got it. Yeah.
But it is a little close to next.
Well, but that's my next ex.
My next ex. How many have you gone through, Angela? Never mind.
This is actually aimed at various other parties out there.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Jake in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
My wife and I came up with a word for what happens to men after they spent too much time with their wives or girlfriends at the shopping mall. And it's Meanderthals.
That's good. Meanderthals.
That is good.
Thank you. Whether it's Meanderthal or something else, how do you avoid these words becoming, as you put it, the verbal equivalents of trees that fall soundlessly if no one is listening? Because, you know, these are all cute, but probably no one's ever going to say Meanderthals again except Jake and his wife.
Well, there is that. I think you need to take these words as much as a game as anything else. That you can't really, you can hope that your word is going to become part of the permanent language, but they so rarely do. It's not really up to you, the coiner. It's up to people at large. So if everybody starts saying nex for ex-husbands or W or any of the other suggestions, that word will become part of the language, but it's not up to the coiner.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and for another few minutes with Barbara Walraff, author of Word Fugitives in Pursuit of Wanted Words. She writes the Word Fugitives and Word Court columns for the Atlantic Monthly. A few from email. Anonymosity, someone wrote in. Anonymosity, I think I'm saying that right. The kind of hostility expressed by people when they know they're anonymous, such as online or on radio call-in shows. Right? Hiding behind their anonymosity.
This is going to be useful.
Expressions of anonymosity. How about derelictual? Someone who is educated and has an opinion on everything but can't find or hold a job and pay his bills. A derelictual.
I need that word. There's a question a lot like that in the book.
Bicelibate. Someone who can't figure out how to find a lover of either sex. Oh, bicelibate. That person is bicelibate. all three of those came from one person. Very clever. Okay, let's see. Seth on the Upper West Side has one for that moment when you think you're calling someone's voicemail, but you get them instead. What you got, Seth?
I came up with Ansurprise.
Ansurprise.
Yeah.
I got an Ansurprise. Thank you. Audrey in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi. Full call when you get the person instead of the voicemail.
Full call. F-A-U-X. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That works.
Joyce in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, I have one for when you're on the phone and somebody's got, they click you off because they have to answer the other call. And I came up with call us, interrupt us.
Thank you very much. Another email from a Canadian woman says, I don't know why that's relevant, except they just beat the United States in the World Baseball Classic, a balding man's ponytail, a ponus.
That is in the book.
Oh, that's in the book?
That's in the book.
Oh.
And we both got it from the same place, I'll bet.
Which was?
That was in the Wanted Words series in Canada.
Oh.
Which started around the same time as Word Fugitives did.
Now maybe we know why that person identified themselves as Canadian. Let's see. For the fizz, the soda fizz that overflows the top of the cup, the overshake.
That's good.
That's a good one. All right. Dave in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I actually have, I have a word that I just thought of for the bicelibate. An angry bicelibate would be bifurious.
Okay.
But the other one was, it's not as good. I mean, I think there's a need for a word when people cough as opposed to, you know, bless you. And especially when people, you can't tell if they coughed or sneezed.
Oh, I put that out there. That has appeared in the Word Fugitives column. And it was the hardest one for people to relate to. I got very few responses. And the best response, I'm afraid, was in Neapolitan dialect. And I can't tell you what it was.
So you have one for that, Dave?
Well, mine is just santé. You know, it's just, my French is terrible, but I guess it's the French word for health.
Santé. Not bad. I want to sneak in Mike in Manhattan before we run out of time because he's invented both a need and a word. Mike?
Yes, and by the way, kudos to your screener who thankfully put me on the air because she was a German major. We all know the word Schadenfreude, which is joy at someone else's misery, and literally it means damage, joy. After the last Bush victory, one of my other Democratic friends said there was no word for what the Democrats felt. Namely, they didn't feel they wanted to feel badly at someone else's success. So I took apart Schadenfreude, damage, joy,
and I got
Erfolgstrauer, which.
Erfolgstrauer has to be the last word because we are out of time. Barbara Wolrath, Word Fugitives in Pursuit of Wanted Word, published by HarperCollins. This has been great fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.